Broadcasting from the commodity capital of the world, Zurich, Switzerland, this is Insider's Guide to Energy.
This addition to Insider's Guide to Energy is brought to you by Fidectus. Go to www.fidectus.com for more information.
Welcome to Insider's Guide to Energy. I'm your host, Chris Sass, and with me as always is co-host Johan Oberg. Johan, how's it going today?
All good, Chris. All good. Another week. A little bit interesting here. We're on a different side of the world today, which is quite interesting. We'll see how this works out. But great to see you, and hope you're enjoying the other side.
I'm enjoying being in North America this week, meeting some fans, meeting with Greentown Labs to talk a little bit about what they've got going on. So we're going to do quite a bit getting our job board going. For the students that are following us, if you haven't checked our job board, there's some amazing jobs and more postings coming. But now let's get into the show because we got an exciting show coming this week.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we it's one of these shows where when we set out and throughout all the different episodes we have done, when we start looking at what is actually changing in this industry and especially then as how is technology actually driving this one. So I think it's going to be a really interesting to dig a little bit into this, maybe into your area a little bit more, Chris, in terms of the startup section and how you actually affect with new companies and new technologies coming into the industry. But I, as you know, always been a fan of this, even though I haven't been in that boat yet, but really looking forward to it. What are you looking forward to?
I think the startup angle is interesting. I'm always looking for startups and companies doing exciting things with innovation. The quantitative models and the analytics and what we can do with data as we start looking at data-driven decisions and we have these islands of data everywhere. What are people doing with the data might be interesting. I mean, people have been collecting it for a long time, but where are they putting it? And then what can you do with it? And then what tools, you know, what COTS tools, what's on the shelf that I could maybe take advantage of today? And what could I maybe do in the future? Those are all things I hope to learn through this episode.
No, I totally agree. And I think that the data related to actually outcome, you know, we talked about data so much. I'm almost getting tired of the word data. So let's see what it is. But hey, we're not the ones, the stars of the show. I think we should bring on our guest. And I hope I do it justice in terms of pronouncing David Levan from Sequant. Excellent. Welcome to the show, David.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I've enjoyed your guys' podcasts for a while now, so I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you on. We always say the same thing. We have met you before. We had a bit of a brief chat before the show. We did some research, of course. But for our audience, who are you?
Sure. Well, again, my name is David Levan. I'm the CEO of Sequant.io. You know, I've been in the energy industry since about the year 2000. I've worked for various large and small vendors. I love startups. So I always end up gravitating away from larger companies, which I find a little bit stifling towards smaller companies and smaller startups and trying to make something happen in the marketplace that hopefully the marketplace needs and maybe is not there. So that's sort of prior to the year 2000, I was in Silicon Valley for a while with a couple of companies, one of which went public. So I love creating things in the energy industry, for the energy industry. As I mentioned, you know, we can talk about, you brought up a subject near and dear to my heart is startups and we can talk about that. A brief word about Sequant. We are a seven-year-old company. We have a modern energy analytics platform that's completely cloud-native. We've been growing at a torrid pace at over 100% per year, basically since our inception. So it's been a really fun ride. But what we do for the energy industry is we provide analytic tools for risk management, deal valuation, asset valuation, and what we call true portfolio optimization. So that's Sequant, but happy to take the conversation wherever you gentlemen would like to.
So maybe that brings me to my first question, and as to kick it off a little bit, with your experience, you mentioned you have run through this industry for quite some time. You worked for a lot of different startups from different kind of areas around this. If we look at some industries, it's probably easier to be the startup, the challenger, the one that goes in and changes certain things. Whereas maybe in other industries, and in this case, maybe energy, it might be harder due to the fact that it's more of a legacy. It's big tankers, slow movements. So how is it with your experience? You've done it now for quite some time. How is it to be the newcomer, the smaller ones, with all due respect to small, but in this massive energy industry?
Yeah, the energy industry is particularly challenging. You alluded to this, obviously, in your question, is that companies don't really love working with and investing in brand new solution sets, because they're concerned, you know, these are multi-billion dollar organizations. They don't want to build infrastructure around a company that is not maybe going to be there a year from now. So the first couple years at Sequant, it was fun, exciting, and very, very difficult, right? I mean, I think in our first couple of years, we gained two small contracts with two munis, municipal energy portfolio managers. And then we built up from there. And it's been a fun ride. But I think you're correct. There's in every market, there are early adopters. And then there's a great book called Crossing the Chasm. As you get from early adopters to mass kind of acceptance. And I definitely think Sequant has crossed that chasm in the last couple of years. It's amazing what's happened. But you have to be willing to grind up the side of that mountain. And then there's all sorts of false peaks. And who knows, maybe we're in a false peak now too, but there's all sorts of false peaks along the way. And you just have to be willing to sign yourself up for that grind. And then once you get a new customer or several new customers, you have to execute, because the energy industry in particular operates on word of mouth, right? So people call other people and say, how was it to work with that company? And so unless you're executing, you know, nearly perfectly, it's hard to progress in the energy industry.
So you talked a little bit about this grind and getting the company from where it started to today. I think equally important is solving problems that need solving, right? So in our pre-call, you mentioned that the industry is really evolving and changing, and there's new players coming in all the time. So 7 years for me, as a startup guy, is eternity. In startup, weeks are years, and it seems like it's a long time. So have you evolved? Have you pivoted from what you started? 7 years ago, what did you think your company was going to do? What problem statement were you solving for the industry? And does that same problem statement still exist today?
Yeah, for the most part, we have not pivoted. I enjoyed myself and my co-founders, we enjoyed a deep background in the energy space. So we clearly saw what was needed in the market vis-a-vis energy analytics. And we built a business plan that has survived quite well through today. We've barely pivoted. My background is business development, and one of the goals that I wanted to achieve that I definitely have not achieved is when we started Sequant, I wanted people to say, oh, I want access to that model. Let's run the credit card on a Sunday and I'll be using it on a Monday, and no salespeople are needed and no trainings are needed. And that's for quantitative analytics, that hasn't happened. We have a very robust sales team, sales and marketing team of about 7 people now globally. And without those people, we would be getting nowhere. So So one of my hopes and dreams was to, you know, just show up on a Monday morning and have 7 new customers because people ran their credit card on a Friday afternoon. That part hasn't quite happened.
Okay, so you don't have your customers just lining up to self-provision and do their own thing without any interaction. You keep using maybe some terms of what you do. And so Johanna and I pride ourselves on asking just idiotic questions because, you know, we just want to ask the questions. But you said quantitative analytics for energy. Maybe it makes sense to step back a little bit and explain what you mean by that, because that's a pretty broad statement to some. Like what kind of quantitative analytics and what do you really do?
Yeah, it's a great question. The wonderful thing about the energy industry is it's so broad and deep. I think it's still the largest economic sector on the planet. So it's a great question because analytics means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And we run into analytics all the time that we say, hey, we're not going to do that because we're focused over here. So it's a wonderful question. So what, you know, Sequant is a PhD quant heavy organization. So we have a number of quantitative developers that build analytic models using traditional techniques and newer techniques like machine learning. And we house all of those models in a cloud-native platform that allows our customers to simulate their risk factors, price, weather, load, interest rates, FX, right? Optimize their physical assets, power plant, hydro, solar, wind, battery storage, you know, you name it. And then value all of their bespoke contracts and vanilla deals, maybe coming from a trade capture platform, and then producing the type of reports that they need as an organization from those quantitative models, those strings of quantitative models, to provide them with actionable intelligence of how to hedge. Where does our exposure lie? Is it in the month of July or in the month of August? Is it with this counterparty or with that counterparty? And then how to best address that. And then what makes Sequant, I know this, I don't want to go on too long about a commercial about Sequant, but what makes us a little bit different is that we've married that with all sorts of modern data science tools so that individual analysts and data scientists can examine their own data in their own proprietary way, even building their own models. To create the best of breed between build it yourself and use a vendor.
If I look at trends in trading that I've seen, you know, working in the trading space as well, is people are hiring quants, right? If you look what a trader's skill set is, as we get to more automation and quicker decisions and shorter cycles and all the wonderful things that are happening in energy trading, does this mean I hire less quants, or the second part of your statement saying, well, no, you're going to have those quants and they're just going to use our tools and their tools. So help me understand, because I don't think there's a surplus of quants just sitting around waiting to get hired by all these energy companies.
No, I think that's one of the things driving our business is that quants are very expensive and they're increasingly hard to find. But it brings up an interesting subject about the value of building things yourself as opposed to using a vendor. And I think this goes across the energy industry for all sorts of different solutions. The benefit, obviously, of hiring your own quant or your own whatever and building it yourself is you think you're going to get exactly what you need. The challenge there is, I can think of so many examples of this, is where you hire 3 or 4 or 5 quants. Maybe you hire some DevOps people and some software people to build something around their quantitative models. And you realize 3 years in that, boy, we haven't progressed as far as I thought we were going to progress in 3 years. And we don't have everything we have. We have some working tools, but oh my gosh, this person just left the company. And now nobody knows how to use that tool set, right? And so that's a challenge. I still think it's a very viable option for people to hire their own quants or their own whatever and build certain secret sauce type of applications themselves. But the benefit of working with a vendor, whether it's an ETRM vendor or an analytics vendor or data provider or whatever in our industry, is that they have dozens, if not hundreds, of customers. And so that solution has been built as production software that is being pounded on globally by dozens and dozens and dozens of users, if not hundreds of users. And if there's some rough edges or if something's going to break, somebody's going to find it. That vendor's going to fix it. And then everybody, if it's a software as a service solution, everybody gets the benefit of that fix or that upgrade. So Sequan is a software as a service solution. We maintain a single code base. So if somebody in Houston finds an edge case in one of our models and breaks it, we go in and fix it. 2 weeks later, the fix is in. And then all of our customers globally have benefited from that. I think there's a real value to having a system that is being used across the board by, you know, dozens and dozens of customers, as well as your own in-house people who can take the output of those systems and create last mile analysis on their own. And that's your secret sauce, is that last mile analysis. And again, what we've tried to incorporate both in Sequant by providing data science tools so you can do your last mile analysis right in Sequant.
Which I think is interesting, because this is a little bit of our background. All of us here is a software as a service. So the more of the basics you can do in an outsourced or work together with someone else with input from other customers, the base layer will be there and you can kind of put that aside and you focus on your own 20%, your kind of USP. This is what we can do to separate it. And I think that's kind of where software came from the beginning. I worked with Salesforce early days when they came out as a CRM system, same kind of way. We looked at deal flows, lead flows, et cetera. So very different, but very equal in terms of how software as a service works. But out of curiosity, in terms of, I know I've got loads of questions about customers and how you work with them, but I'll hold on for that a little bit. But do you see any differences here between your customers in terms of how much of they're interacting with your platform and how much they do on their own, depending on their size? If we look at some of the big utilities, for example, you know, as Chris says, quants, they're high value now. People kind of pull them all over the place. So do you see any differences here, how you work with your customers depending on size?
Yeah, this is another example of how we've had to evolve, especially for smaller customers. So what we've seen, and I'm sure you guys have seen this too, is the decentralization of energy decision making to entities in the marketplace that nobody maybe had heard of before, right? It could be a corporate off-taker of renewable energy. Whether it's a big entity like Amazon or Microsoft or Google or Ford, or a smaller entity like we ran across a major movie theater company that is buying renewable energy credits. So they're having to do things, Delta Airlines, they're having to do things now that are that I wasn't aware was even happening 15 years ago. So, but for those smaller entities, to answer your question directly, we're having to roll out what we call portfolio management as a service, a new AAS acronym that you have to learn, PMAAS, right? And that's because smaller entities can't find the quantitative staff. They can't afford those people. And so we're having to open up a service portion of our business to do the portfolio analytics for them. What our main focus is to build tools in our platform that allow people to self-serve analytics in the way they want to see it, rather than a prescribed format that we think they should use. The largest entities, the global entities, they basically have you know, quantitative staff all over the place, and they will take Sequant and run, you know, thousands of simulations on their portfolio, take all of those, you know, tens and tens of gigabytes of data that's being generated daily, and they'll do all sorts of interesting things with it that we might not even be aware of. And so there's a big, wide chasm between the largest entities, global energy companies on the planet, and your individual corporate off-taker or your municipality that needs a lot of hand-holding. And so we're having to kind of stretch ourselves in both directions to meet those needs.
So it, from your conversation and the references, it sounded very American in the conversation, but in a pre-call, you talked about your organization is now over in Europe. I know because I think the person that introduced us was working with me in Europe. And so that's how you got to be a guest on the show. What's the differences between the market? So I get the general, you know, we had some pretty broad brushstrokes and all the things we just talked about, but the devil's in the details. So how different is, let's say, the European market than the North American market?
Yeah. So there are some key differences in terms of, you know, doing quantitative analytics. I think, you know, there's a lot more similarity than there are differences between the European energy markets and the North American energy markets. In fact, that's why you see so many European companies that own generation assets in Europe coming over and buying generation assets in America and vice versa, right? We're seeing a lot more of that. One of the key differences that we've discovered over the last few years working with a couple large corporate off-takers of renewable energy is that Europe doesn't have as much basis risk as the U.S. does. So if, by way of example, if you have a renewable wind farm at a generation bus, producing energy at that node, your off-takers, the contracts for your off-takers might be settled at the hub. And so there's a huge amount of risk in those contracts between the node and the hub in terms of generation and contract settlement that is just part of the energy landscape in North America. And it's not so much in Europe. There are more kind of country-specific pricing. And so you can be generating wind in Dresden and settling at a different hub, and basically the price is the same. So when companies from Europe are starting to do business in North America, they are surprised by the amount of hedge slippage and risk that the basis relationship introduces to their portfolio. And I think that's going to change probably in Britain first and then come to the rest of Europe. But it hasn't changed yet. So that's one example. There's sort of fine details that can be very material in the differences. But as I said, the similarities greatly outweigh the differences.
Now, have you been building the sales organizations with different go-to-market strategies? Is it different going to market for a young tech company or energy tech company in North America as opposed to the European market? What are some of the challenges on the sales side to going to market?
Well, it sort of remains to be seen. So we have two staff people in Europe today. We're hoping to grow our analytics staff in Europe. I think we have one senior analyst in Europe today. We're hoping to grow that number. But so far, what we're seeing is very similar problems. Hey, I've been working with this system or this solution, and it doesn't do what I need to do. So now we're looking for other solutions. I would say one of the things that's driving a lot of change in our market is the energy transition. You have BP, you have Chevron, you have Shell, just to name three, that are investing massively in non-traditional assets for their portfolio. And that's requiring a whole new shift in legacy systems are not meeting those needs. So what do we do now? I think the other interesting thing we're seeing in Europe and elsewhere is that individual, let's call it production companies, they make something that is not energy related. Maybe it's cheese, but whatever it is. But energy is a huge input to their process. And they're seeing in the last few years much more energy volatility than they're used to. So now suddenly those companies are hiring risk managers, and those risk managers are asking about solutions. Now, the legacy systems, you know, the deployable, heavy, thick client software solutions are never going to work for those type of companies. You know, they're not going to invest $1 million in an ETRM system that needs to be deployed on site, right? So they're looking for lighter solutions. And I think the whole market is bifurcating, and we're seeing most of our opportunity in just basically energy transition and smaller companies that are concerned about energy prices.
And how much is the current energy issues going? So if we look going into winter this year, you gave the example of corporations. I mean, I've heard there's concern of some of the German automakers not even being able to do their production is going to be impacted by energy costs this year. Because as we go, we still haven't seen the true costs of energy in Europe yet. I expect those to be coming this fall and winter, depending on when they're allowed to be passed through. But Germany in particular, have you been seeing interesting trends there? Because it's looking like a pretty bumpy winter for manufacturing in Germany.
It is looking like a bumpy winter in the energy markets due to all the geopolitical events that are happening, as well as just, you know, the massive shift away from traditional sources to more clean energy sources. I have to say, I don't know where that's going to fall out. I think a lot of people are concerned about it. I think in the short term, it's like you said, it's going to be a very bumpy winter. I think the trends, though, are energy transition, more emphasis for production companies to have a greener strategy. And then the largest energy companies, typically the fuels players, are looking to transition their portfolio. In the short term, I couldn't tell you what's going to happen next, but in the long term, the trends seem pretty clear.
Do you think this is a topic on its own where we see, okay, what is short, midterm, and long term in terms of this, and what is the effect of the current situation versus the energy transition? Because we're also seeing, we had some guests on the show a while ago that looked at some of the large oil and gas companies and look at their investments, where still the majority is in conventional oil and gas, and quite of a small number, even though it's the public number, is the one in energy. So I think there is a little bit, but do you see a little bit on the side, but do you see anything that the actual green, we look at green PPAs for specifically, but do you see that there is actually a holdback on this now? Because right now it's so much uncertainty, and uncertainty is never good for change. So do you see any signs here?
Well, certainly a year and a half ago, everybody was talking about ESG concerns. Every risk manager on the planet was talking about ESG. And I think going into this winter, that's gone from, maybe top five on their list to top 15, right? So there's definitely been a tumbling in ESG concerns, because people are very concerned about how do I just run my business for the next 6 months vis-a-vis energy volatility. But as I said, more, if you look 3 to 5 years, and we want to call that the medium term, all of those trends are continuing. You know, large energy players are investing a huge sums into their energy transition strategy. And smaller entities, as I've mentioned before, are being pressured to come up with a green strategy and also solve their energy volatility inputs, the volatility on price and availability, quite frankly. So I think the macro trends haven't changed at all. But certainly the next 6 months, everybody's more concerned about keeping their business running than they are about meeting some not so well-defined green metric that is more socially acceptable.
So how is the short term impacting the buy cycle for folks for technology? Is it increasing it, hurting it? Is it net neutral?
The second quarter for us, it was probably our best quarter of all time by a factor of two. So, we're hiring as fast as we can, and we see no end to the amount of demand. Now, one interesting nuance to that, which I suspected even late last year, is we saw a huge number of crypto mining companies coming into the energy sector, especially here in the US, and saying, well, we've got, you know, all this money from our investors. We want to locate this here. Help, we need risk management systems. And suddenly, much of that demand with the drop in cryptocurrency prices has been put on hold. So that's one definite impact to the market correction there. But in terms of renewables and the need, so renewables has created more uncertainty in energy markets because they're an intermittent resource. And quite frankly, that's been good for us because we model that intermittency quite well. So we're not seeing any drop in demand, Chris. I mean, the demand is just on a torrid pace right now for us.
That's good. And then, so you're hiring lots of folks. How hard is it? Is there a lot of folks looking to get into the energy industry? Are there a lot of folks that are just seeing the value and the growth projected ahead? What's it like finding talent for kind of the skills you're looking for?
Well, we happen to have a couple things in our favor. One is we're located in Colorado, right? So between Denver and Boulder, Colorado. That's been good for us because there's a lot of data scientists and people graduating with masters and PhDs in the local universities that are looking, or other universities that are looking to move to where we are. And we're, you know, energy transition is a sexy topic. So we've been doing quite well with staffing, but my counterparts in Houston, New York, Chicago, and London, are the markets I'm most familiar with, are having horrible challenges finding staff, right? And so I think it's always a challenge. We typically interview 40 to 50 people before we hire one. So it is something that it takes a lot of work, but we seem to be okay at it.
Well, cool. And then from a company point of view, you talked about sustainability and all and your cloud-based service. What do you do internally for your service to follow like ESG kind of policies and things like that?
Yeah. Well, we're very focused, sort of touching on the earlier subject. We're very focused on allowing our employees to work wherever they want and sort of within reason, however they want. So our sort of corporate philosophy is when somebody needs to take vacation, they take vacation. If they have something going on in their life, we support them. And so we're very decentralized. We're cloud native. We have a couple small offices like the one I'm working in today. And most of us work from these small offices or from home. So, you know, I don't think our sort of carbon footprint as a company is very large. I think we're doing fairly well there. And then we are, you know, we're very focused on giving opportunities to people from diverse backgrounds as well.
So if we change gear a little bit from kind of the inside to an outside in terms of your customers, and we touch base on this a little bit, and I come back to a little bit to the credit card on Friday and get going on the Monday, which I like the analogy around it, but being a software, I know, unfortunately, it's not that easy. But how much would you say today, because looking at some of your customer base, how much of this is actually software business, which is just a license or how the business model works, and how much is actually consultancy around to get started? Are you working on both, or so how does this match in terms of your business model? Are you charging consultancy, and that's a big part of your business model, or is it literally get the platform in, self-serve, off you go?
Yeah, our preference is to focus on a flexible solution that we can deliver, in the cloud to our customers. That is our basic business model. As I mentioned earlier, we are being, for smaller entities that don't have the staff to run a Sequant, we're offering portfolio management as a service. It's a growing area for us. And we're more than happy to take those fees, but it's not our preference. Our preference is to make our platform so easy to use and fully flexible that, you know, our goal, the shining peak of the mountain, that anybody can use it, that you can come on, Johan, and start doing energy analytics right within our platform. That's what we want to accomplish. We as a company try and minimize those consulting fees. Typically, you know, we're setting clients' portfolios up in a few short months, and then they're off and running. And, we just don't love those consulting fees.
Got it. And so I guess, you know, as we start pressing up a little bit on time, so from the industry point of view, and from the user point of view, you're doing these models. What kind of impact does it have to the industry? What your customers, what's the impact for them using these kind of models and tools?
Well, you know, what we're seeing, some of the success that we're having that I'm most proud of is that our customers are the number of users at those customer shops is been growing very substantially for us. And that is a real good sign of success, because we just don't want three people in the risk management department touching our software. We want the front office. We want the traders being able to value and do what-if analysis. We want the back office to be able to say, okay, we're mid-month. Here's what we've done this month. Here's what we're projecting. Here's our netting agreements, and here's our counterparty payments that we're projecting. We want the entire organization to have the flexibility within Sequant to do all the different types of analysis that they need to do that we cover all in one platform. And so when we see user counts that maybe 5 years ago or 4 years ago for us were 3 to 5, go up to 15 to 50, that is a sign that we're doing something right.
Yeah, but I get that, right? So I get that you got a nice growth rate, but the reason those numbers are going up, there's some tangible value to the business, whether I'm front office, whether I'm back office, wherever I happen to be sitting and using your tool. I guess, what is a tangible kind of impacts that they're seeing, I guess, is what I'm trying to understand.
Well, again, this is sort of, inside baseball for Sequant. But, you know, what traditionally happens in the energy industry is you get these heavy analytic systems being used by a few people, and then the traders and the back office people are all working on spreadsheets. And those systems don't tie together. Or you have certain people working in their deal capture, certain people working in SAP, certain people working with an analytic package or several analytic packages, maybe your long-term planners working in a fundamental model, and none of those things talk to each other. And so you get very discrete types of analytics that are being done in the company. And what we're trying to do is put that into one, or not put all of it, we're never going to get to all of it, but put large amounts of that into one platform. So if the trader is operating on a spreadsheet, but he's about to do a trade and he needs to see what is the portfolio impact of that trade so he can get quick approval from his upper management or from the risk manager, he might just value that quickly in the same platform that they're using. And so that's really the answer that we're seeing at Sequent.
Cool. That helps me. So Johan, any final thoughts here as we get up to the top of our time?
I think as in everything we're talking about, software across any industry, as a startup, well, I would probably not refer you as a startup anymore, maybe more of a scale up or whatever word we need to do. But where do you see yourself in the future? You've now been going on, you established yourself, outside of other industries, it's an IPO or it's a kind of a buyout, that kind of looking forward in the future. Where's the future for Sequent?
Well, we see a lot of our future coming through partnerships. We have some partnerships today with companies like Fluence, with companies like Molecule, which is an ETRM vendor, Initech in Europe. So there's a number of partnerships that we've executed on, and we see that continuing for us. I think Sequent, what's happening in the technology field is more and more users are adept. You know, we have so many data scientists coming out of schools these days that they're very adept at programmatically accessing the back end of these software packages and creating their own workflows across systems. And so we see that as a big part of our growth. Not everybody needs to use our UI. And Sequent can actually sort of be the Intel inside to various systems, whether that be a trade capture system, a back office system, all sorts of different systems exist within the energy industry. Even a settlement system. We're working on a partnership now with another vendor. And so they just want discrete analytic inputs in their primary system to be flowing to their customers. And we're more than happy to execute on that strategy. We think, you know, we're well positioned with our technology to do that. And that's where we see a lot of our growth. And for the rest of it, who knows what happens? I don't know. I can't forecast that far into the future.
Well, awesome. Well, I think you've given us a good view, a little bit of what you do, giving us a bit of view of being in a startup and the staffing concerns. So we've been very broad in the conversation. Any final thoughts for our audience as we wrap up this episode?
Yes, there's nothing better than startups. If you have an idea, go try and execute on it with one caveat. Go get experience in that part of the energy industry before you execute on that. Because as we all know, the startup success rate is about 10%. And the reason for that is people take a little bit too big of a leap without understanding the energy, the industry that they want to disrupt. So go work for 4 or 5 years in that industry, in that particular part of the industry. But if you have a passion for startups, it's a wonderful experience. Go do it.
Well, awesome. Wisdom words. I think energy in particular, you need to have not just the technology background, but the understanding of the energy industry. I think there's plenty of people that have tried to do startups as technologists that have failed miserably because they didn't understand the nuance of energy. It's not maybe as simple as it may seem for many. But thank you so much for being our guest on today's show. It's been a pleasure having you.
Chris, Johan, it's been a pleasure. I'll be in Europe for the month of September. So if there's something more we can do together, I'd be happy to join in.
Well, happy before that. For our audience, you've spent another hour listening to Insider's Guide to Energy. We hope you've enjoyed the content. I hope it's been informative. If you have, don't forget to subscribe, like, and share the content. And as always, add comments. We love your comments. And we will talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.